your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
All those things you've been wondering about? Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Jen Cruz, and welcome to the Journey Radio Show. So tonight we have scheduled Tim Weisberg on the show with us for tonight. He's having a little bit of technical difficulties with his Skype, so bear with us as I keep talking, and hopefully he can figure it out. So tonight we were going to be talking about tulpas and all that, but and thought forms and the potential that they are affecting all the things paranormal that we experience. So that is a very interesting topic. And last time I had interviewed Tim Weisberg on a different show, it was so fascinating. He appeared very excited to hear that I knew what tulpas were and to discuss that with somebody who was intuitive. Because I actually have wondered, you know, is this place really haunted, or, it, you know, was it haunted before somebody started looking here? So these are some of the things that I have wondered about. So it'll be fun to explore that with him. Until we figure that out and get him on the line with us, I'll tell you a little bit about what's going on. Next week in Minnesota, we've got Paracon, the big paranormal convention in Minnoman, Minnesota at the Shooting Star Casino. And we're going to be there. We're not going to have a booth this year, apparently, which is okay. I am really excited to be attending these presentations because I have been to all these different ones and have only seen a partial presentation from one other presenter. I presented at Paracons, but haven't actually gotten to see an entire presentation somebody else gave. So I'm really excited to attend the event and take it all in just like a regular person would instead of being strapped to a booth. So this is kind of exciting for me. And I know that my teammates are going to be there too as the She Squatchers, and we are going to have a great, great time. And so I've got so many different friends and family members that are coming that it's just going to be a really fun time. So if you're considering coming up for the event, I highly recommend it because it, you know, honestly, it's in the middle of nowhere is what the celebrities say. Minnoman, Minnesota is pretty far away, and the closest airport for them is usually Fargo, North Dakota. And they have to fly in and out. So after the event is over at the end of the day, they're hanging out with everybody else, and the only place is there to hang out. So basically, you're hanging out with all the celebrities there for a couple days, and you get to know them, and it's very personable, and they remember you from year to year. Grant Wilson, oh, he's my favorite. He remembers me every year. Walk up, he's like, Jen Cruz, oh, big hug. And, you know, I just don't know how he does it. He can remember people's names like crazy. It's just amazing. So, anyway, I'm just going to check in here with Tim and see if he's fixed it yet. His Skype was hanging up after one ring and sending him straight to cell phone and forwarding from that to a cell phone. So it wasn't working so hot. So we'll see. Anyway, so I hope to see everybody down at Paracon in Minnoman, Minnesota. And it is October 13th and 14th. It's a two-day event. And that's going to be a really fun time. And I know lots of listeners are planning to be there. And I can't wait to be there. I see Kat is in the chat room asking me, why aren't there any Mickey Mouse tulpas? Well, okay, let's go with tulpa for a moment. Let's see. Did we get Tim on the line? Is he there? Hi, Tim. Are you there? Hello? I can see him, but I can't hear him. So maybe he'll start talking soon. Are you there, Tim?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I hope I'm not videoing.
I'm not videoing with you, am I?
Well, you're not live on video. You're live on the air, though. Hi.
You can't see me on video.
I can't see you, no.
Okay, good, because I didn't bother to put on a shirt for this, so.
Okay. Darn it. that's live and naked.
that's how I roll, you know? I like to come home and put on just, I like to put on my little, Haunted Towns underwear and sit in here. And
there you go.
I'm just that's kidding. All.
You know, to each their own, you just never know.
I like to keep it loose, keep it relaxed, keep it casual.
There you go. That's always a good time.
Anytime you can do an interview in your pajamas, you're doing all right with life.
I do all my interviews in pajamas.
There you go.
Oh, that's awesome. Fortunately, I don't have to go apply for jobs, so that's good. So, I was just telling everybody we're going to be doing Paracon next week in Minnesota. Have you ever done anything like that? Attended one of those?
Yeah, I've done a few of them. We have Salem Con every year here in New England and Massachusetts. I've done Para History Con. I've done Rhode Island Comic Con, Tower Con. You know, I've done a bunch of different things, and I like those formats because it gets you a chance to meet a lot of people that you might not normally encounter in your everyday excursions and your every weekend travels. So you get a chance to get some different perspectives and talk to some people about things that go on in different parts of the country.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's fun. It's really, I love those events. I've been traveling around lately, the last few months, quite a bit, doing different events all over. And it's always fun to meet all those people and see everybody and get to know everyone. And then it's time to go home and go back to work. That's not the fun part.
Right, and then you always end up with the con flu afterwards, where everybody comes home sick with some sort of, you know, black malac that they just can't get rid of.
Yes, yes, and that's true too. But it's a good time.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these people, you know, that attend the events, they go to like one a year, if that. And then there's the people who go on tour with these types of things, and you see them everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to get it out to a lot more of them. I hooked up with an agent for the first time, which my buddy John Brightman. I was always, like, tentative about getting an agent because it sounds so kind of pretentious to be like, well, why don't you reach out to my agent and have him deal with it? But John's been doing a great job of getting a bunch of people booked, and when he was starting off, he said, you know, I'd be interested in having you as a client if you'd be interested in, you know, having me as your agent. I said, sure. And it's worked out pretty well where he's been able to kind of spread the word out a little bit more. But anybody out there that's having a convention that wants to book me, I work real cheap, so.
Well, hey, I'll get the word out. I know all those people. You might be saying, hey, Jen, will you be my manager? Oh, I'm just teasing you.
Well, that's the thing is I think a lot of people have in the paranormal field have been to enough of these events that they think that they know like how to put one on or how to book one for people, how to book people into them. But in actuality, like it's a lot more work than people think it is. That's why people have asked, how come you guys haven't put on any kind of Paracon where you are? And I said, are you kidding me? I wouldn't want to take on that kind of responsibility. I have enough trouble just getting people out to one ghost hunt for one night, let alone having people for multiple days and hotel rooms and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. And it would be nice if a big place would just take it on and say, oh, sure, we'll do that for you.
Right, yeah. No, they just want the fee for the room and then leave all the rest of it up to you.
True. Very true. Well, you've got a pretty impressive background with all the different things that you've done on the radio with Spooky South Coast and you know, you've been on Ghost Stalkers, Ghost Asylum, and now Haunted Towns. What's up?
Hey, you know, the way I look at it is anybody that wants to pay me to do something that relates to ghosts, that's a win for me. So don't tell anybody I said this, but I would do it for free.
Well, I won't tell anybody.
So if they're like, hey, you know, you want to take on this job? I say absolutely. Because the way I see it is, there's enough of a, I don't want to call it the wrong approach, but there's enough of approaches that I see out there in paranormal media where I say, that's not exactly how I think it should be done. So anytime somebody wants to ask me how I think something should be done, you know, I look at it as an opportunity to kind of educate people and share with what I've learned. Even if I'm just the one doing the research for a TV show for another crew to come in and do the investigation, at least I know that I had a hand in making sure that the history is properly paid attention to and the right people were interviewed and that certain concerns that the townspeople might have are taken into account. So that's why I love these opportunities, because it lets me kind of, at least for in a small way, have something done the way that I think is the right way. And I find that most of the people that I've worked with are of the same mindset. They think that it's the exact same way that they would do it too.
Yes, yes. All those things are wonderful. I'm just in shock that you have so many things going all at once, you know, and even the wrestling thing. Jeez, you even got active in the ring. What was up with that?
Well, I've always been a wrestling fan, and my whole journey into being part of the media started through pro wrestling. I was writing a newspaper column when I was in college. That's when wrestling was at its peak of pop. Watching it every Monday night. And so there was a newspaper article that ran in my local paper, and every once in a while I'd go to look for it on Fridays, and it would say, you know, the guy did not write the wrestling column this week, tune into the space next week. And I said, well, wait a minute, I'll write a wrestling column for you and I'll do it for free. And I did, and I wrote the column for free for 2 years before they finally brought me on board, and then they hired me as a sports writer. That led to working at the radio station. Working at the radio station led to Spooky South Coast. That led to all the other paranormal stuff. So I always say wrestling is kind of what gave me my start. So when this local organization asked me if I would get involved as a ring announcer, I was originally just supposed to be a special guest ring announcer for one event. But I went and I had a good time, and apparently they liked the job that I did, so now they've made me their official voice of House of Bricks Wrestling. So now I do all the ring announcing at all their events. And what's great about this organization is everything that they do is for charity. The wrestlers don't take a paycheck for it. The person who puts on the event, he just takes out the costs of putting on the event, and all the rest of the money goes to different charities.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's absolutely fabulous. Wonderful. So you got your butt kicked, and it was all good for charity.
I did. I'd been talking with the guys that run the organization for a while about getting physically involved with stuff in the ring, and we had a program in mind last year that didn't work out because, you know, being donated time from all the wrestlers, not every wrestler can make every show. So things kind of dropped off with the wrestler I was supposed to have a program with, but now I showed up to the last event, and they said, oh, and by the way, you're going to get jumped tonight. And so when that all went down, and I basically had to kind of earn it, I had to piss off this wrestler enough that he wanted to beat me up, and then I had to actually take a beat down in the ring. And when I'm having it happen, I'm not worried about whether or not I'm going to get hurt because I know how it all works, but I'm just worried about make sure it looks real for the audience. And I must have done a good job because people were, you know, really, really concerned about how I was doing in the days following.
Oh, I know, because I saw your post. I was like, what happened?
Oh, yeah. I had somebody who emailed me, sent me a message on Facebook and said, listen, my brother's a lawyer. He said he's willing to take your case. I had a couple other people threaten to show up at the next show and beat up the wrestler that beat me up. And I'm like, listen, first of all, if it actually was legitimate, I would not have just stood there and let him hit me. I would have gotten up and gone after him. But second of all, it's all part of the show. And I'm going to get my revenge in the end, and it'll all work out. But it's something that I always dreamed of being able to do. And, you know, not actually being a trained wrestler and getting the chance to do something like this is pretty special, and I'm very grateful for the chance.
Well, that's wonderful. And I know it's more work than just putting on a show because, you know, I've worked as a massage therapist for many, many years, and, you know, a lot of the pro wrestlers have been my clients over the years, and they legitimately get sore from all of that. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, and that's the thing is, like, people say, oh, well, wrestling isn't real. Well, It is, because it's not like you're actually not hitting each other. It's just, it's like pulling a punch. You know, it's they're basically stuntmen. And if somebody said to you a stuntman had to go and get massage therapy, you would say, hey, I perfectly understand that. So I don't know why, you know, people would think that wrestlers wouldn't get beat up and have that same wear and tear on their bodies, because it's actually, I think, harder to be a wrestler than it is to be an athlete in other ways, because with other athletes, like if you're a football player, you know that when the ball is hiked, you're going to get hit. You know there's going to be a collision of bodies, and it's supposed to happen. But when you're a wrestler, you know, the impact is supposed to be lessened. So when something happens that you're not expecting and you really take a wallop, you know, it catches you off guard. So it's not as easy as people think that it is, but at the same time, it's, you know, they would never last if they were actually legitimately getting that beat up every single night.
True. That's very true. Because I've actually also seen the guys who do the cage fighting and stuff like that. That isn't,
oh yeah.
Oh, they are messed up. Their ears. Oof. Don't be doing any of that.
No, I would never get involved in that. That's way out of the realm of my comfort level.
Yes. So I was telling the listeners before you came onto the show, and thank you for joining us tonight. I'm so excited to have you on, Tim Weisberg, everyone. Da, 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 da. We have really awesome sound effects. I just wanted to just mention that, you know, when I had you on as a guest on a different show, you had seemed very interested in the idea that I knew what tulpas were, and that I've considered that. I wondered things about that before when I was visiting a paranormal location. Wondering, was there something going on here before people started looking for it here? Or, you know, was this caused by people looking for it here? Is it a tulpa situation? And so I thought, wow, it'll be fun to talk with you about those things.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that I've been looking into for a long time now is, you know, the idea of thought forms and ghosts as thought forms. And I think it's only really started over the last couple of years to take some degree of legitimacy in people's minds. For the longest time, if I suggested it to anybody, they told me I was crazy. They're like, no, ghosts are dead people. Like, I know for a fact ghosts are dead people. It's like, how can you be sure? And so I'm glad that people are finally starting to pay attention and realizing the power that we have with our mind and the things that we can do, and that maybe paranormal research is just kind of reflecting that back to us.
Yes, exactly. And isn't there a case where they had developed a character and put it out there, and after so many people started focusing on it, people legitimately started seeing it in paranormal investigations?
Yeah, I mean, look at how many places that kind of thing has happened, where we've looked at a location and said, if any place is going to be haunted, it would be that place. And I look at the Lizzie Borden house. It's in my backyard, and I go there all the time. And for the longest time, that place was a private residence with no reports of any paranormal activity. But then it opens up as a bed and breakfast, and everybody comes in talking about the murders, and everybody comes in talking about, I wonder if it's haunted. And if that happens, I think enough people can put out the energy to kind of make it haunted. And that's what we're seeing with a lot of these, especially the historic haunts, because you look at them and say, wow, that house is 400 years old. I bet it's haunted. And if enough people think that, enough people put that out there, then we can create these ghosts ourselves.
So what do you think the process is by which that happens?
I think that, first of all, I think that to some degree, a lot of these locations might already have either some type of paranormal phenomena taking place or have the capacity for paranormal phenomena. And that, what I mean by that is, you know, maybe it has a field stone or a granite foundation that's rich in quartz and can kind of record and amplify the energy in the building. Maybe it's close to running water, which is going to give you a positive ion charge. Maybe there's all these different factors that can kind of house a haunting, no pun intended. And then what happens is we're going on there and putting in the energy of actually creating what it is. And it could be as simple as, you know, maybe there's some low level of paranormal activity there that is feeding on the energy that we're putting out and kind of fully forming and growing into a ghost. Or maybe it's just that we're going in there and saying that this place is haunted, and by doing that we are, you know, maybe we can just kind of go in and just create a ghost the first time that we're in there. A lot of times people will sit down at a Ouija board, for example, and say that they're not getting any type of activity going through. And then the very next time they sit down, it could be the most intense activity they've ever had. Well, what changed? Nothing really changed, except now this time it's your second time using the Ouija board there. So, you know, maybe now you put out more energy into it to make it kind of respond back to you.
Right, right. Well, there was this whole idea of like PK manifestation, psychokinetic manifestations from psychic energy that is very emotional, psychic emotional energy creating movement that appears to be like a ghost, with the intention of, I think it acts as with the intention of the emotion that was creating it. And I've literally seen cases personally, looking into cases where people are sending me pictures and I'm looking at the pictures and I'm going, I see what that little kid is seeing in that over there. I had seen this massive energy that had been born in this house by one of the other kids that was there, a teenager, who was very frustrated by her little brother.
As most are.
Yes, and had this PK manifestation that would like kind of go after him because she was so frustrated. And what I saw in these pictures was it looked like parts of ghosts. Not full ghosts, but just like body parts, things crawling on the floor in this mass of energy that was going after this kid. And I think at that point it became a poltergeist. Like, I think it was picking up like shattered pieces of spirits that were left behind, and they were gathering together in this energy and still doing whatever that energy was going after. And does that make sense?
It does, and that's where in order to kind of look at thought forms as ghosts, we have to kind of decide where we think that energy goes. So is it a matter of we're putting out energy that creates an actual being and an entity separate from ourselves, or is it that we are putting out the ability to do this? So let's just say that we go into a place that we think is haunted, and we create this ghost through thought form capabilities, and then all of a sudden doors start slamming on their own. Well, did we create an entity? Did we create an energy that exists unto itself and is able to slam that door? Or did we somehow slam that door subconsciously and telekinetically with our mind, not even realizing that we're doing it? So is the phenomena coming from within us, or are we putting the energy out to create an external force that then causes this phenomena? And I think in a lot of cases it's a little of both. And certainly if you're going to if a ghost exists in nature, then I don't think it's scary. I don't think it's going to be something like you would see in a horror movie. But if a ghost is something that we are putting out unto our, into the ether on our own, well, obviously we're going to have a projection of what we think a ghost is and what our influences of ghosts have been, and so therefore we might create something that's scary. So a real ghost might just be nothing but the residual energy of a person, but a created thought form ghost might be absolutely terrifying.
That's true. That's very true. So, when we're getting ghost activity with the door slamming, does that continue on after we leave? Does it continue doing things like that, or is it just a one-time occurrence?
Well, I think if we're doing it with our minds, it's probably a one-time occurrence. But if we're creating something that exists solely to slam that door shut, it could keep doing it, for infinity, as long as somebody is there to perceive it. And that's the other thing I think about ghosts, because you mentioned emotion. I don't think ghosts are a physical thing. I think ghosts, whether we create them or not, are an emotional state. So you can never prove a ghost physically, just like you can never prove love or anger or hatred or jealousy with any type of device or any type of video footage or any of that. So if it is something that is emotional, then maybe it just lasts as long as that emotion stays strong enough in that location.
That's an interesting idea. As a psychic medium and as an energy healer, I can sense energy, and it's interesting to drive through places that I don't go to often, maybe just, four times a year I drive through this area. with Larry, and he can sense energy too. And so we can tell the energy's changed. Something happened here since the last time we were here. Ask around, and sure enough, something happened at that area where we felt the energy shifted there. It didn't feel good at all, you know, and then it only lasts so long and then it's gone. Which I think is interesting that you know, something happening in a location will be that perceivable when you drive through it.
I mean, I think it's a combination of being sensitive enough to pick it up and also having it be strong enough to be perceived. I mean, sometimes you walk into places and even if you're the most, like, I'm psychic as a brick. So sometimes I'll walk into a place and even I will feel the difference in energy. And that's because it's so palatable that I can actually detect it. And usually if I'm on an investigation with people and I say, this place feels really weird to me, like, everybody else that's with me is also feeling it, because, like, I've got to be like the lowest person on the totem pole to feel those energies. So when you feel that and you feel that difference, now automatically everybody that's feeling that is going to have a reaction to it, which I think can only kind of feed it in more. So by you perceiving it, you're also feeding it and making it so that you can perceive it. It's kind of like a little bit of a loop.
You think so? Because I don't get scared of it when I'm driving. I'm just driving and I sense that something, that the energy changed. It's like driving through, I don't even know how to describe it. It's such a, it's almost like driving through a little invisible wall where it literally feels like you got phased. Something shifted. The energy is completely different all of a sudden. And it literally, there was a line you could perceive it changing at.
It's almost like, it's like you're a AA battery. And for a brief second, you are making that connection with the other AA battery and powering something up a little bit more. And then it's like you pop out again as you drive away. So you're just kind of fitting in there and feeding into this power that it's already has. You're just making it that much stronger for the brief period of time that you're coming in connection with it.
That could be. But then I've seen with the Buddhist monks over, and even in Tibet, when they have something terrible that happens, they believe that energy is there in that location then, and so then they'll gather there and they'll do all these meditations trying to change the energy of the location back to its original state.
Because I think what it is that you're experiencing an energy that's become concentrated in some kind of form. And as we know from, you know, the laws of thermodynamics, energy can't be created or destroyed. It can only be changed. So when you have an energy that's kind of concentrated like that, when you go and try and do these different, whether it be, you know, some type of ceremony or some type of experiment or whatever it is that you're doing, all you're doing is breaking up that concentration of energy. So you're helping it to dissipate out and then not have that strength that it has in its current concentrated form. So it's not like you're ever killing anything or making anything go away, or even, I'm sorry to my, you know, medium friends, it's not like you're even helping anything cross over. What you're really doing is you're taking that energy that has retained this form and you're helping to dissipate that energy out so that it's no longer retaining that form.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion.
Okay. There you go. I see somebody in the chat room had a question about that. There's all kinds of things going on in the chat room. She said, sounds as though fear is what causes a tulpa. I don't know if I agree with that at 100%, but I think it could. What do you think, Tim?
I think that if you have fear happening, I think fear can kind of power up, because fear is a very powerful energy that people put out, and it's very easily perceivable. You can tell when somebody's afraid. So if you're something that can draw on energy, you know, fear is kind of like getting smacked right in the face with it. So what you're experiencing is you're experiencing something that is already been created or already existing that is only feeding off that fear. It's not that the fear is creating it. I do think that fear can make things worse, because not only is it powering it up, but it's also taking you out of the right mindset to be able to deal with it. It's putting you in that permanent flight or fight mode. And if you're the type that would rather flight than fight, then all you're thinking is, get out of here, get out of here, get out of here. And you're not really perceiving what it is that's happening to you. So I always say that fear does hold a place in paranormal research because you want to stay sharp and you want to stay on your toes. But overwhelming fear takes you out of rationality. And being out of rationality means you'll either not believe anything that's happening in front of you or you'll believe everything that's happening in front of you.
And you'll think it's the worst thing ever. It's probably a demon.
There was I talked for a while with a psychologist about the nature of fear, and he told me a great quote that I think is perfectly applicable. He said that the worst ghost that you can imagine has to be worse than the worst ghost you can actually encounter in real life. That whatever it is that you can think that you're going to be afraid of is got to be worse than what actuality can be. And I think that that's what happens for a lot of people. I've taken so many people that are afraid of ghosts and afraid of encountering a ghost into haunted locations where they've had an experience and said, oh, you know what? That wasn't so bad. And I look at it as it's no different than trying to get somebody on a roller coaster. They say, I was terrified when I looked at it from the ground, but once I got up there, I had a lot of fun.
That's wonderful. We're at the half of the hour right now, so we're going to have to take a 2-minute break. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back with Tim Weisberg.
Be careful. The new whisper.
My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the producer and host of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I am a published author, academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast who holds 4 advanced degrees with an interest in parapsychology and life after death issues. I have written about and encountered nearly 100 situations involving the paranormal, with my most frightening experience being a floor-length mirror cycling around in front of me in a haunted room I had stayed in. I invite you to tune in Thursday evenings at 11 o'clock p.m. to 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
This is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the Para-X Radio Network for the Para-Cave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Para-X Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. This is the Journey Radio Show, and I'm Jen Cruz. Tonight, we've got Tim Weisberg as our special guest. And so welcome to the show. Back to the show, Tim.
Great to be here. Great to be anywhere.
And me too. I'm glad that we exist. And so when we stop existing, please make us into tulpas. <We're> entities created by thought forms. But I see that in the chat room, Cater has posted a link about the Philip experiment, and apparently Tim knows about that and can enlighten us all about it.
I do. I actually have a lecture. When I go out and I lecture at different events and libraries and paracons and all that, I always try to think outside the box a little bit with my lectures. I never want to just get up there and tell people, like, Paranormal 101, here's what a ghost is. Here's how you investigate for ghosts. Because you're dealing with people that already know that. So I always try to think outside the box and find different angles. And a couple years ago, I did a presentation at SalemCon called Maybe Ghosts Weren't People Too. And we explored the idea of thought forms and some of these other possibilities for explanations of ghosts. And so then I got really into studying the Philip experiment. And so in 1972... the Toronto Society for Psychical Research decided to hold this experiment where they would actually create a ghost. They would actually create an entire backstory for a ghost and then see if they could make that ghost exist. And so what they did is they took a cross-section of society They had like a housewife. They had an accountant. They had a sociology student. They had a heating engineer. They brought all these people together. They all sat down and they created this character that they named Philip Aylesford. And so they completely fabricated this person. Never existed. Never had any kind of actual basis in reality. They just created the story from the beginning that he was born in 1624 in England. He was a military man. He was knighted. He was involved in the English Civil War. And he worked as a spy for the king. And they created the story that he was married to a woman that he didn't love, but fell in love with a gypsy girl that he couldn't have. And she eventually became accused of witchcraft and was burned at the stake. Philip gets all upset about that, so he commits suicide. So here we have the entire life arc of Philip, his whole backstory, how he rose to power, and how, you know, love caused him to meet an untimely end. Great classic romantic story. They make this whole thing up and then decide to sit down and have a seance and try and contact Philip. And so originally, you know, they tried doing things like just sitting at the table and reaching out and seeing if he would talk to them, and that didn't work. So finally what they did is they said, okay, let's do this the way that people expect it to happen. And they dimmed the lights and they brought out Ouija boards and crystal balls and all that kind of stuff. And they started holding a real old-fashioned spiritualist-style seance. And when they did that, they started getting results from Philip. They started to get – the table would vibrate. They'd feel cold breezes, rapping sounds. And supposedly the table actually started tipping. And this became something that they felt was Philip actually reaching out. But the researchers also felt it could have been that it's just because once they made it look more like a seance, the people sitting at the table expected it to be a seance, and they might have caused all of this with their mind. So it could have gone either way. It could have gone that they actually created this ghost of Philip that reached out and communicated with them, or it could have been that they expected it to do these kind of things and somebody was able to telekinetically make all these things happen.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's such a great story, and actually, they've made a couple movies recently based on it. But The Apparition was one of them. It turned out to be a terrible movie, but I was so excited when I heard that it was about the Philip experiment, and then it turned out to just be like most horror movies today, just a huge pile of crap.
Well, I think we have a big expectation sometimes for special effects and all that, and acting.
Well, what was good about The Apparition is that it didn't have a lot of big time special effects, which I thought was cool. But it just didn't deliver in the storyline at the end. That's the thing about horror movies these days, is they all will have great story and great setup, and then the end always turns out to be lame.
Oh, that could be. You know, and I have to admit that, you know, these B movies, these B horror movies, I actually kind of enjoy them. They're kind of an art form for me.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I actually considered doing a B horror movie review.
There's enough of them out there, and people love them. I mean, if you look at some of the horror conventions that are out there, you know, nobody cares so much about going to see the stars of the big movies. They love to go see these you know, second tier horror movies that they see all the time on cable growing up. You know, those are the ones that stick with them. So The Exorcist is great, but you know, I want to go and I want to meet, you know, the star of Child's Play, or, you know, some of these movies that are just below the A-list of horror.
The A-list of horror. But what about the Sci-Fi Channel stuff?
I would call that the D-list myself, because I don't find those movies entertaining, but people love them.
You know, I think it's entertaining because it's how ridiculous can you make it?
Right. When you're getting to the point with tornadoes full of sharks, now you're just doing it for fun and not trying to get everybody to take you seriously, which is a great way to go, because, you know, if you were trying to make a serious movie about tornado sharks, then I think, you know, people would probably have you locked up.
Right. And then we used to buy these 10 packs of movies, you know, one DVD, 10 pack of movies or whatever from the big super center shopping center. And, I was in there shopping with my boyfriend one day, and he saw one of these packs had a movie called Evil Bong on it, and he had to have it.
Yeah, I did that for a while. See, and now my friend John Tenney has seen every old movie imaginable. And him and I always talk when we were together about the different dollar DVDs you can get at those big box stores, like right by the register. And just these forgotten movies that have fallen into the public domain that nobody remembers. And you get them and you pay a dollar for them and you're like, how did I ever forget that this movie existed? It's so bad it's good, and I only paid a buck for it, and it's public domain, so I can go show it in a, you know, at a movie theater and have a little film festival, and nobody will come after me for any residuals.
Yes. Oh, it's just crazy. How do you know that you can share it at a movie theater? I mean, is that a listing on there?
Yeah, if a movie's in the public domain, which generally if you're seeing it being sold like in a dollar DVD type of situation, it's because the rights have expired on it and nobody renewed them. Or if it's before, I think it's 1929 or 24, if it's from before that era, then it doesn't have any rights and it's in the public domain. And there's a whole list of ones that you can find online if you search for it. And there's a website where you can actually find it, archive.org, where you can find public domain movies that people post up there. And if there's no rights to it, you can show it, you can put it on TV, you can do whatever you want with it, which is why a lot of us grew up watching these B movies on TV, because they would fall into the public domain and television stations could run them without having to pay for the rights packages to own them.
Well, that is interesting to know. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's a lot of the there's a lot of Looney Tunes cartoons and old Three Stooges shorts and things of that nature that have fallen into that, which is why, you know, a lot of cable access shows will show that kind of stuff.
Interesting. I'm seeing in the chat room, Poochie Love says that there was an EVP near the end of Sharknado movie. Oh. The New York one. I didn't know that.
I'd never watched any of them. Not even the one with Chris Jericho in it. And I love Chris Jericho.
Really? I saw the first one and part of the second one, and then I kind of lost interest. But I tell you, it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, no. If it ever happened, we'd all be screwed. But
yes, we would.
It wouldn't. Ian Ziering could not save us in real life.
Yes. So, as far as tulpas are concerned, didn't the whole idea originate from something in Hinduism and mysticism?
Yeah, the original idea comes from, well, I mean, these things have been around for a long time, even before the Tibetans kind of gave them a name. It's something that has always been, as long as mankind has needed to have other people around him or her, then they've always felt the need to kind of create somebody to be around them when they're alone. So what we're calling a tulpa, or what we're calling a thought form, a little kid might call an imaginary friend. You know, it's just the idea of creating somebody else there so that you are not alone. It's just a manifestation of something else. So what happened was with the Buddhists in India and the Tibetans, they would utilize this as a practice. So instead of just using it as a like a social coping mechanism, they said, well, what if we actually could kind of create these and have them do things for us? So instead of just being companions, they would be subservient to us, and they could go out and they could do our bidding. And so a lot of the Buddhist beliefs and the Tibetan beliefs involved utilizing these beings for the purposes of magic, for the purposes of revenge, for the purpose of sending these beings to do what you wouldn't want people to go and do. And the idea behind it was you would conjure them up, they would go and do your bidding, and then you would be done with them. But a lot of times when that happened, the thought forms, the tulpas, would not be satisfied with that. You know, they'd want to know, well, I didn't exist before, why do I exist now? What am I supposed to do? You're going back to your life and I'm stuck here existing with no purpose. And so they would actually turn around and go back toward the person that conjured them up and would now seek revenge on them.
Ooh, that's not cool.
Right, which is why, you know, thought forms aren't always a great idea, because unless you kind of are planning on, like, how many horror movies have been based on the idea, or horror stories anyway, have been based on the idea of a little kid has an imaginary friend. After the kid grows up and doesn't need the imaginary friend anymore, all of a sudden the imaginary friend starts showing up in real life. you know, I can't remember what it was. I want to say it must have been maybe a Goosebumps movie or something or other, but a Goosebumps story. But there was some sort of horror story where that happened in the 90s where it was, you know, the imaginary friend was no longer needed but came back and tried to take over the life of the person that had created it. And so this is a story that was not an uncommon tale in those ancient times, that you would create these tulpas and maybe they would come back and try and essentially replace you in life.
So Kat in the chat room is asking, how similar or dissimilar are these to golems?
I think with the golems, if from my understanding of them, is those were more for created as it's almost like they have a more physical sense to them, whereas the tulpas are kind of a more of a more of an energetic thing. So when you're creating a golem, it's actually because it's created out of like clay or mud, whereas like with a tulpa, it can just be pure energy. It doesn't actually have to have any kind of physical formation. So the golem is the same idea of like you're creating this thing, but at the same time you're creating something that will be a physical embodiment of what it is that you're trying to do, whereas a tulpa can just exist solely as an energetic version of it.
Now, I had read a long time ago about the Hindu gods coming up, getting together to create a tulpa to take care of the great evil that none of them could beat altogether. And so they went together and created Ma Durga, which was a goddess form, to defeat the great evil, and she was able to do that. So, I mean, how would you classify that as it's obviously in a faith of some type. I hope I didn't get that wrong. If I did, I apologize, but that's how I interpreted what I read.
But there's all kinds of belief systems and all kinds of religions through history where that's happened. There's a lot of Native American beliefs where they've kind of conjured up these greater deities to either bail them out or to protect them or what have you. When you think about it, and I don't want to get to the point where I don't want to insult anybody's religion, but let's just say for a moment that God isn't real. Okay, let's say that God does not exist and God did not create the universe, that it's all just something that's happened through physical science. You know, let's take the Neil deGrasse Tyson route for a minute. And so if that's the case, then God as we know it, the monotheistic God that most Western religions look at, the monotheistic God is a tulpa. We have created this entity because we needed to create it. We needed to have something that would protect us, that would rationalize things for us, that would give us a purpose for the things that we do, to say, okay, we're doing this to serve God, to give us kind of a unifying force and to give us a guiding force. So mankind has created God that now can reach out and influence the world around it. So if you want to say that there was ever no God, and some people will say that, I would argue that it's entirely possible that that's true, but that we have actually created God to this point, because so many people feel that real connection with God that there has to be something to it.
That's an interesting idea. I've never thought about it that way.
And it's not very popular when I tell, you know, if I'm lecturing to a church group.
I don't think that would be my choice of things to share to a church group, Tim. What are you thinking?
You know, all I care about is if they put out like cookies and juice at the beginning, I just always make sure that I get my fill before I start talking, in case they chase me out with pitchforks and torches.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, it's an interesting idea, and I think that when we're researching or looking for answers in the world of the paranormal and the unknown things, we kind of have to put aside what we think we know and just look to see what we find.
Mm-hmm.
And then even then we're questioning, where did that come from? How are we ever going to know?
Well, that's the thing, is there's some things that I think that we're not made to know. Some things that we're not meant to know. I think there always has to be some degree of mystery in life in order to keep us. If we had every question answered, then what's the point of even existing? At least from a capacity of having rational thought. You know, we have to be able to always be seeking some kind of an answer. And I think that tulpas actually help us with that, because they can, just when we think we have everything figured out, they can kind of open the door and find us a new group of questions, a new set of questions that we need to have answered with the different things that they can do that we would never expect them to be able to.
The tulpas?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what a lot of other faiths and other belief systems, you know, the jinn. We have the jinn, which is where genies come from. But they're something that has been passing on knowledge to the living for a long time. So basically, like, we're using them as our avatar to go out and get some answers to the bigger questions and come back and inform us and tell us. And as that is happening, as we're getting that little bit of knowledge, now we're able to ask new questions and we're able to go deeper. So think of all the things that, you know, for example, science is some degree of a tulpa in that sense, because we've created this belief system. We've created this energy that's out there that goes out and finds us answers, but also allows us to be able to find new questions to ask. So we understand, at least we think we understand, everything about how gravity works. Now we can figure out, well, what about anti-gravity? We know how matter works. How does antimatter work? So every time that we're able to get closer to the truth, we get new questions that will keep us asking questions.
Well, that's very true. Antimatter, matter, dark matter. It's all kinds of... There's always more questions. It's always a to be continued. Mm-hmm. And here we have even more questions coming from the chat room. Do doppelgangers have any connections to tulpas?
You know, listen, until a couple of weeks ago, I would have said, I don't even know how much stock I put in the idea of doppelgangers until I had an actual doppelganger experience. A couple weeks ago, we were at the Murdoch Whitney House in Winchendon, Massachusetts, for an event, and we were in the basement where there had been, in the past, we had had peach pits that had imported out of nowhere and were thrown at us by something we couldn't see. And so we'd had previous, you know, that kind of previous activity made us want to stay down in this basement and investigate further. And as we're down there, there's all this weird stuff going on, and we're getting shadow figures that are appearing on one side of the basement. So being at the front of the group, I asked everybody to stand behind me. And behind me was this kid named Nate. And Nate is a young guy. He's very excitable on investigations. And so at one point, I see Nate come up on my left side and stand in front of me and turn around and look at me. And I say, Nate, stay behind me. I want everybody, if anything's going to get thrown, I want it to get thrown at me and not hit somebody else. Stay behind me. And he said, I am behind you. I haven't moved. And I was like, but I just saw you step forward and look at me. And then a couple minutes go by, and he says, did you just turn around and look at me? And I said, no, I've been standing straight, staring straight ahead the whole time. He said, I literally just saw your head turn around. You looked at me, made a weird face, and then turned your head around again. I said, no, that never happened. And then to the right of me, there was a woman experiencing the same thing. She saw her friend come up around the other side of her and stare at her when she knew she was standing behind her. So whatever this was, it was taking on the form of us. And so I think how that relates to tulpas is I think that these entities can kind of take whatever form that they want, and that form might be of us. You might actually walk into a location where one of these tulpas exists, and you might see yourself standing there staring back at you. And you might see, you know, your long-lost grandmother and think it's your grandmother, but it's not. It's just this being pretending to be your grandmother. And I think that what ends up happening is a lot of the times it's taking a form that is familiar to you and will have the most effect to you, but in actuality, it's just this featureless energetic being.
Hmm. But these featureless energetic beings, do they have consciousness?
Oh, well, I think that we give them consciousness, and that's the problem, is if it didn't have a consciousness, we would be okay. If it just existed to do what we wanted it to do and it didn't have its own self-awareness, then it wouldn't be so much of an issue. But because they have that degree of self-awareness, that's where it becomes something that wants to kind of lash out or cause any problems for the living, because it knows enough that it exists but doesn't understand why.
Hmm. Interesting. And then what does it do? It probably gets bored.
I think maybe some adapt and some kind of hang around and say, okay, well, I guess I'm going to be a ghost here now. I think some might actually go out, and I think some might just maybe they just expire. You know, maybe they just run out of time, and eventually whatever energetic bonds are holding them together break up and they dissipate out into the ether.
That could be. So then what happens? Is there a Tulpa heaven, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just that energy breaks off and, you know, just goes out and forms other bonds and becomes other things. So I don't think that there's a heaven for our physical energy at all. I think if there is a heaven, if it does exist, that's for our consciousness to go. That's for whatever is the intelligence behind the energy to go and do. And the Tulpas themselves will probably dissipate out. And hopefully with that, their intelligence level does too, because they're not actually created to exist in the first place.
True. So if you could create a Tulpa, what would you create one to do to help you out with something?
Clean the house, actually.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be a good one. You know, maybe I think it would be awesome to have a Tulpa that drives my car, because it would just freak out everybody else that couldn't see it.
Yeah.
They would just see me sitting in the back seat while the car is driving itself. But I don't know that I would ever want to create one. If I was ever going to create something, and I have done my own version of the Philip experiment with some level of success, if I was going to create one, it would solely be to have it, you know, all right, can you go close the door? Can you go slam that window shut? Can you make this K2 meter light up? I would create a Tulpa solely for the purpose of proving that it can be done. I don't think I'd ever want to create one to use against people or to do things for myself, because in a way that's almost like playing God. And as we find out over the years, when you play God, it usually ends up biting you in the ass.
Well, I think we've learned that from all of the AI movies.
Right, exactly.
I freaked out when I saw AI toys in the store. I was like, haven't you been watching movies, people? What are you doing?
Right.
They should not be making this. We are coming to the end of the show, Tim, and I want to make sure that everybody knows where to find you. Can you let them know?
Well, the easiest way to find me is SpookySouthCoast.com. That's where our radio show is. Every episode that we've ever done is available there. Over 500 episodes now. We've been on for almost 12 years. We also have our own app now where you can watch the show and listen to the show as it's happening, because we do live video streaming. And then everybody can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. It's pretty much at Tim Weisberg everywhere.
Wow, you're everywhere. That's a lot of social media.
My day job is working in radio as a news anchor, so I spend a lot of time in front of the computer. So I like when people are social with me, because it gets boring in the newsroom by yourself.
I've seen your live feeds from the newsroom. I can see how exciting it is.
The stories are exciting. It's the downtime when nothing's happening that I start to get bored. I'm like, gee, I wish I had somebody to talk to, but I'm all alone in here except for all the ghosts that are around me.
There you go. You can do a little paranormal investigation over there.
And we have.
And you have. Well, that's awesome. Well, I wanted to thank you for coming on the show tonight, and hopefully we can have you back on another time.
Oh, absolutely. I had a great time.
Thank you so much. And for all the listeners out there, please do follow the show at facebook.com/ The Journey on Radio. And tune in next week, and we'll have another guest for you. I was looking to get the Ohio Night Stalker Bigfoot team on, so I'm hoping they'll say yes. We'll see. They're working on their Skype. So good night, everybody. And, oh, by the way, I used to be with the Calling Radio Show, and that show has now moved to 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern Time. So Jerry is still doing that show, so catch the show. The Calling Radio Show at 7 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Para-X Network. And we'll see you next week for the Journey Radio Show. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Para-X, and thank you, Sarge and Tim. Good night.